One of the big changes, and Ron to it in his presentation is great. You stole part of my thunder. It's fantastic, Ron. Is church has changed. The idea of church has changed. It used to be, and I'm going to steal a good Kevin Costner line of, sort of thing. It used to be, if you build it, they will come. Right? Everybody went to church. Who can remember a time and a day where everybody pretty much went to church or at least acknowledged that they are part of a church? Especially in a small, there's a few people with more gray hair than I do that can remember that. Good, yeah. Yeah, but if how many of us, of you now hands it here, can say this, I don't understand it at all, just because there's a church, what makes you think I'm gonna come? Right? Anybody on that line of things? Maybe people with less gray hair like I have, you know. As we go, church changed. No longer does it work that we plant something, we hold a ministry, we have an event happening here in this building, that it is a foregone conclusion that people are just going to automatically come to it. It doesn't happen anymore. It doesn't work that way. The world has changed. Church changes. And so we have this relational, that was the slide with the square in it, this relational idea that comes in. We need to actually go out and embrace people and figure out how we do church outside of these walls, outside of this building. And that's where we come to our message today, where I've titled it, Embracing Your World. Right now, that's a pretty big phrase, embracing your world. Right? Now, we can look at this and we can say, what do I mean by that? Well, globally, of course. Yes, so I'm going to embrace the whole world. Come on, world. I'm having at you. Here we go. Right? Now, that's pretty daunting, and I'm going to give that up pretty quick and go back to bed, because it's an awfully big world and I'm an awfully small person in it. But I'm not talking about globally here. I'm talking about your world. The places where you are. The places where you interact. I mean the places where you most frequently come into contact with people. Your neighborhood, your workplace, your school, your recreational activity or club, your family. It's a pretty big world, but this is the world that you can identify. This is the place you can be familiar with. These are the people's faces that you say, hey, I know these people. And I've built a relationship where I see them all the time. And so how then do we embrace people in that context? Well, the first thing we need to do is we need to remind ourselves of what Jesus' strategy was. Now, if you have been following along over the course, and I'm going to point back to September here a little bit, at the beginning when I was talking about what an apprentice of Jesus Christ looks like and how we study from him, an apprentice is someone who learns from a master, right? Someone who is trying to learn a trade, and so you ask lots of questions and you follow what's going on and you look and see what's going on and you watch what the master tradesperson does, and you try and do that way so that you can then become a master tradesperson. Right? And so we looked at some fundamental ways that Jesus did ministry while on earth. And one of those ways was, I said, that he engaged the unchurched. Do you remember that phrase? He engaged the unchurched. And how did I say, you remember what I said, how he did that most? He ate with people. He shared a meal. Remember, is that ringing a bell? Let me read something for you here. And I'm gonna attempt in my most sanctified, happiest, and I love throwing people on their heads way of thinking. I want to read something for you here and just completely turn your thought of Jesus upside down. Now, Jesus had a method to ministry. He came to do ministry in certain ways, right? And he came to be a servant, right? He came to he preached, not to preach, but the good news is here, right? He came to, listen to what Luke says. In chapter 7, listen to what Luke says about what Jesus' method of ministry was. His strategy for ministry was, listen to this here, it says, the Son of Man, this is Luke chapter 7, verse 34, the Son of Man came eating and drinking. I love it. Let me just think. So we think of Jesus, right? And we walk into Jesus, and here he's got the white robe on and the blue sash thing and the perfect long, you know, hair and the nicely neat trimmed beard and the sandals that are always clean and the kind of this nimbus glow around him with birds and chirping, you know, and storms around him and everything's nice around Jesus. We have this idea of what Jesus looks like, and he's walking very calmly and petting lambs and holding children and talking very nicely to people and, you know, all these sorts of things, right? We got this idea of Jesus, right? Now let me switch over here. Here's Jesus who's coming for a meal. Everything he does, he is eating or drinking or giving food somewhere. Now, if you read through Luke's account of the Gospels, there are many, many, and I'm not going to identify them for, there are many ways where times that Jesus is at a meal or has just left a meal or is providing a meal. Right? That's what he does. One commentator said that if everything through Jesus' ministry is he's either at a meal, going to a meal, or leaving a meal. He came to eat and drink. This isn't just a something he had to do. That was his ministry mandate. That was how he does ministry. I'm going to sit down and we're going to share a meal together. And life is going to happen, and change is going to happen, and relationship is going to be built over food. Now, he didn't just, you know, come and do this a little bit. Follow along here a little bit. But later, in the second half of that verse, he did this so often that this is the reputation he was getting from the people who didn't like him. He says, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and you say, this is what he's saying to the Pharisees and the people who are accusing him of being a bad person, and you say, here is a glutton and a drunkard. Okay, so Jesus is an overeating, overdrinking, party-going person. Whose vision of Jesus has just now been a little bit warped? Now, Jesus isn't drunk. Jesus is not a slave to food and to eating desires, but the man liked to eat. He wasn't just going on a slim, fast diet. He wasn't just meeting people for salad. He was getting together for a barbecue. He was getting together for a meal, for a feast, for a party. Where did his ministry sort of begin in John? The very first miracle that we see Jesus do in John, the wedding at Cana. Remember what's happening there? He's bringing the hooch. And the good stuff. And that's the reputation he had. His mandate was to eat and to drink with people. He used it as a vehicle to connect with people. And it wasn't just that he went and ate other people's food. He brought food for people. Remember the feeding of the 5,000? There's 5,000 people here. They need to eat. What does he say? He turns to the disciples. He says, well, these people need to eat. Go get them some food. And his disciples say, And one of them, Andrew, runs back and says, I got a kid here with some fish and some loaves. It's enough maybe for him and two people, but we got food. Your optimism, where we go? And Jesus is fantastic and feeds 5,000 people out of them. With leftovers. Because meals are important. Not just for the nourishment of our bodies, but for connecting with one another. Luke records in Luke chapter 19, the story of Jesus' encounter with Zacchaeus. You're familiar with that, right? Zacchaeus, the wee little man, climbed up into a sycamore tree, right? Wanted to see Jesus. There's a song about it. Right? And Jesus comes along and says, hey, Zach, guess what? It's lunchtime. Let's go to your place. We're going to eat. And he just invites himself over for food. And there's two things. The narrative splits at this point. There's two things that happen. The first thing happens outside the house, and another thing happens inside the house. The thing that happens outside the house in the story is that everybody points fingers at Jesus and says, look, he's going to eat at the tax collector's house. This is not good. This is not popular. All these bad things are happening. Who does he think he is? He's going to be unduly influenced. He's supporting the Roman regime. He's doing all these things that are bad now, and they're getting angry at Jesus. And nothing good is coming from that conversation at all. People are not being fed. People are not growing. People are not being encouraged. They're just getting angrier and angrier and hungrier and hungrier. And then you circle inside, and the picture that happens inside is Jesus is sitting down and having a meal, sharing some laughs, enjoying life, and sharing life with Zacchaeus, to the point where Zacchaeus stands up and he says, Jesus, this is how it's going to be. I have lived this way, swindling people, taking their money, robbing them blind, being a pawn of the Romans for so long because I love money. Jesus, I love money. And now I am going to give it all back. And not just give it all back, but I'm going to give it back fourfold. I'm going to pay it all back. My life has changed because this encounter at a meal with Jesus. We don't know what Jesus said. I'm pretty sure he didn't share the fourfold gospel. I'm pretty sure he didn't just, you know, get down and start preaching and hammering Zacchaeus over the head with the Bible. He probably sat down and he said, Zacchaeus, how's your life going? Tell me about, let me share with you something that maybe you haven't thought of before. Let me tell you about my life a little bit. And those words, the personality, the presence of Jesus broke through Zacchaeus' life and changed him from the inside. Over a meal. And there are a lot of other times where Jesus meets with people and food is involved. And so as apprentices, this strategy needs to become our strategy of embracing. Now I will know, now somebody can easily say, so we're on point two. I think we got points. Is that, Jace, do we got points? I hope we do. Here we go. Becomes Jesus' strategy, then becomes our strategy, right? So now some of you are going to say, well, Ryan, there's a lot of different ways that we can embrace people. We don't have to do it with food. But I would say we're Baptists. We have to do everything with food. That's, we just can't not do things with food. And some of you would say, well, Ryan, we can do it with healthy food then. And I would say, yes, but I'm a former youth pastor and I can't do that either. So it's junk food or nothing, right? But is it this process, this strategy, this method of eating and sharing a meal with people, something that as apprentices of Jesus Christ, we need to do to embrace. Now let me tell you, is it easier to walk up to someone and say, hi, let me tell you about Jesus Christ? Or is it easier to go to your neighbors who you've just met? And I've did that last night. I walked around with Cody and Evelyn and met some of my neighbors, and at least one of them has invited us over to play. What's exciting? They got a turtle sandbox. It's cool. And we go and just share life with them, and, you know, just eat for a meal. Which is going to be less intimidating? It's going to be to have a meal. We all eat. How many of you had breakfast this morning? How many of you are planning to have lunch? Supper? Coffee in there somewhere? Coffee in there somewhere, right? We got snacks. We've got, I need some coffee here. There we go. How's life going for you guys? You know, I just have a coffee break here. I mean, in workplace, do you get coffee breaks? Do you get lunch? At school, do you guys get lunch break? Yeah, I get some students. Let me just pick on them. They're, yes, I love it. They're awesome. You know, you get, what about, let me think, here, you know, do you, if you're not in work and you're not in school, but, you're going out for meals with some folks, maybe in the middle of the day or you meet for coffee. We have to eat. And there are times when we can certainly do that. And it would be a great opportunity to connect with people and to have conversations because it's something we're doing anyways. How many of you, when you go to work or you sit down for your lunch break or your coffee break, would prefer to do it absolutely alone that nobody ever talks to you? Sometimes, yeah. How many of you experienced that because it was forced upon you? And you didn't really like that. That would, this guy right here, earlier on in life, nobody wanted to eat with me. I sat by myself. It was kind of sad. And so Jesus, in his strategy, ate with those who were spiritually disoriented, tax collectors, the sinners, the people that nobody liked, the unreligious, the people who needed Jesus. And so our strategy needs to be the same, right? Now, it's easy to share a meal with people we like. right? We, you know, how many of you are going for you know, out for lunch after church with people that you like to hang out with? Yeah. Yeah, well, for sure. How come I'm not invited to that? It's that 3-point-something% Ron, that we're talking there. That's why. Nobody wants to eat with the pastor. That's good. I get that too. But what if you were to intentionally eat with people who you don't necessarily like yet? Or you don't necessarily know well yet? Or are perhaps the ones who are a little socially awkward? The ones who maybe don't get the same social graces that we do. Or maybe that are not as Christianly attuned as you are. That takes a little bit more work. But that was the model that Jesus had. Perhaps there's someone at your workplace who is not so socially adept and they sit alone for lunch or coffee break. What would happen if you were to invite them to eat with you? Or at school to eat with you? And you just shared life together. What about your neighbor who, as you're standing over the fence, is railing at the church and you're anti-church and you don't ever want to bring up that you maybe go to church because you don't want them to hit you with their shovel or something? What would happen if you were to engage them in a conversation and say, hey, come on over to my place for lunch? What, you know, Miriam, what if, you know, 3 doors down from you, there's somebody who's just really angry at God for some reason, and you said, why don't you come over for coffee and tea? Oh, you're probably already doing that, Miriam. What am I thinking? You know, you said, love it. You know, we get, those sorts of people are the ones that need to hear about Jesus. And those are the people who we need to show Jesus to. And I read that earlier from Matthew 5 and from Luke 14. You know, everybody loves the people who are easy to love. It's easy to invite people to the meal who are your friends, who are going to repay you in kind. But Jesus says to invite those, to share a meal with those who can't or won't, or you won't expect to get from them. That is the method. That is the call. And I'm not saying that Jesus doesn't want you to eat and drink with your close friends, just that we need to expand that circle to include those who aren't yet our close friends. Right? I want to take a look. So Jesus' strategy becomes our strategy in these ways. And really quickly here, just some quick things that we can talk about, because Ron already outlined some things. What does this look like practical ways? First thing I want to point out is that we have a few ministries here at Argyle Road Baptist Church that is already doing this. We have Saturday morning conversational English. There's coffee that happens at Saturday morning conversational English. You may not feel comfortable at all trying to teach people the idiom of the English language in Canadianese. And that would be me. But there's coffee. And around coffee, you can talk and you can share and you can say, hey, tell me about what are you learning? How is it going? You can engage in that. There's great people who are teaching. We need great people to engage. Coffee. Love it. Saturday afternoons here at the church. We have the House of Mandarin potluck that is changing and shifting. But you can come, you don't even have to bring food. There's a ton of it. And you engage in people who are already coming into the doors. Interactions that Ron talked about coming up even here November 14th. The idea that's flowing out where we can engage with one another, again, around food, around the table. And what did Ron say? We share about our lives, share about our family, share about our work in English so people can learn in that, but also so we can get to know one another. Those are the things that we're doing right here in our church. But what about in your neighborhood? What about outside of church-related ministries? Remember, if you build it, they don't always come. How do we go out and embrace people that are right across the fence or right across the cubicle from us, right? There's a few different ideas. You can hold a barbecue at your house. How many remember the last time that you had a neighborhood barbecue? It used to happen all the time. Back in the days, people would just gather. What would happen if you went to your neighbors and said, hey, why don't you come over to my place? The Riders are going to be on. This is next season, Ed, when they actually start winning. We can, you know, actually use that as an invite thing and go, you know, why don't you come over? We're going to barbecue up and you know, just come. Don't even worry about it. I got the steaks. Right? And you invite a couple of your neighbors over for a barbecue, maybe once a month in the summer when you can barbecue. In the wintertime, you invite them in for something else or whatever the case may be. You know, you just kind of did easy things like that, you know, at lunchtime at work. You made a list of the people and say, you know, I need to get to know these people here, so I'm going to go and treat them for lunch or invite them to share lunch with me, right? There are easy ways to do that. You just have to be intentional about it. Make a plan. Invite more than one person or couple to the meal so that you don't have to carry the whole conversation, because there's nothing more awkward than staring at people over a meal with nothing to say, right? So bring some more people so there's more people to bring things to say, right? Now this is the tricky one. We can do this. Most Christians, when you engage in a conversation that talks about embracing people to get to know Jesus Christ, we automatically assume that somewhere in that conversation we have to say something spiritual. We have to say something churchy, something biblical, or something Christian-y, right? Don't put that pressure on the conversation. Don't put the pressure there to say something spiritual. Let the fact that Jesus Christ, who lives in you, go out and kind of just naturally come out of you in conversation, how you interact, how you work, right? Just focus on sharing your lives together. Share your story. Listen to their short story. As the conversations progress, there will be plenty of natural opportunities to give witness to Jesus' work in your life. Pray. Pray, pray, pray. Pray for opportunities to talk about things that matter. Pray for the wisdom to know when that's happening. Right? Pray about the people that you're going to meet with. Pray about the things you're going to ask them, and then ask God to give you the courage to ask it. Right? Plan open-ended questions such as, tell me your life story. Why did you choose this job? What are the things that you're passionate about? You know, things that they can answer questions about, right? And finally, you know, try to, if you can, avoid just talking about sports and the weather. Maybe go beyond those surface conversations. And the final thing here, remember that the main thing that drew most people to Jesus was not his message. It was not primarily his message. The main thing that drew people to Jesus Christ was Jesus Christ. His person, his welcoming, gracious, and truthful character. And Jesus, as I said earlier, lives in you. And he will be compelling to people. He will be what is compelling to people you engage with, especially as we become more like him, as we grow as apprentices of Jesus Christ. So, Jesus did a lot of eating and drinking. We've all been eating and drinking from an early age. We're all pretty good at it. It's an easy way to start for embracing. It's not the only way. It's not the only way, but it is an easy way. Easy way to share life together. So this morning as we go, one last thing. A challenge for us all. As you go from here this morning, I want you to take just a few moments, maybe in the car, maybe when you get home, maybe here now as we transition into communion, take just a few moments to ask Jesus, who do you want me to embrace? Who do you want me to share a meal with this week, next couple weeks? And then listen. Actually take some time in silence to listen to see who he brings to mind. And then go meet them. Lives will be changed because Jesus is in the business of changing lives.